Straight ahead on Inside Texas Politics, Representative Beth Van Dyne. The Republican Congresswoman explains why she voted against a resolution that passed the GOP-controlled House to end military action in Iran. Her thoughts on Iran's ability to launch attacks on American troops and oil tankers after President Trump claimed, "We've destroyed their military, they can't fight back." Harris County Commissioner Rodney Ellis described some of the tough cuts on the table to close a deficit that could reach $180 million. And next year, the county's budget could top $3 billion for the first time. And Dallas City Council member Paula Blackman, where she stands now as the city manager prepares to deliver relocation options for City Hall, and how much Dallas could make from selling naming rights to its new convention center downtown.
Inside Texas Politics with Jason Whiteley starts now.
Thank you for joining us. I'm Chris Lawrence in for Jason Whiteley. I want to start with your top headlines here in Texas. Residents are revolting against data centers in their communities, and now developers are pushing back with ads of their own. It could be a wedge issue in the midterms and complicate Governor Abbott's plan to make Texas the epicenter of AI. It's sure to be a huge issue facing Texas lawmakers during the next legislative session. A district in West Texas plans to sue the state over how it funds public schools. Midland ISD says the legislature's restrictions stop them from raising and spending money to meet their students' needs. This is the first legal challenge to the state's Robin Hood school finance system in a decade. And the war with Iran hits home. The remains of Private Isabella Gonzalez were returned to U.S. soil this week in a dignified transfer at Dover Air Force Base. Gonzalez was killed in an Iranian attack on an airbase in Jordan, and the young soldier's hometown of Carrollton is now planning a permanent memorial in her honor. This week, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth testified the war has cost nearly $38 billion, and the House narrowly passed a new spending package that allocates up to $73 billion for the war and national defense. Every Texas Republican voted in favor of that resolution, including the congresswoman who represents Private Gonzalez District, stretching from Keller to Coppell and part of Dallas County. We are joined by Congresswoman Beth Van Dyne. And Congresswoman, within the past hour of our conversation, the House narrowly passed a resolution to discontinue U.S. military action in Iran. Why did you vote against that resolution? And does it signal some eroding support for the war?
Well, it was more of a messaging bill. It's not going to actually prevent that from happening. It was a messaging bill pulled on by our Democrat colleagues who don't seem to understand the threat that we're facing right now in Iran. The fact is that the IRGC is a radical Islamist group that has, you know, claimed war on the U.S. almost 50 years ago and whose goal is to end, destroy America. This is a group that has posed a threat to us around the world, is currently lobbing missiles at our American defense forces in the Middle East. We are going to be recognizing a moment of silence on our floor today out of the respect for the four service members, including a 19-year-old woman from Carrollton who was killed in a blast from the Iranian regime into Jordan just last week. So we are going to continue to support this escalation until the end, recognizing the fact that you have a regime that wants to destroy us, has been doing it for the last 47 years through various terrorist activities across the globe. And we need to make sure that this is a country that never gets nuclear weapons, that's ballistic missiles are taken out and doesn't have the ability to hold the planet hostage by preventing energy and ships moving through the Strait of Hormuz.
Are you comfortable with the cost of the war so far?
Again, this is a war long term that needed to be fought in order to be able to prevent further deaths. This peace through strength effort only matters if you are willing to show strength when it is important. I believe that happened. Too many presidents have said that their goal is to end the Iranian regime, to end the terrorist activities that we've seen. but then they went flaccid at the end and didn't do anything about it. You finally have an administration that is willing to punch the bully, which is Iran and the IRGC. My goal is to make sure that that happens as quickly as possible, that we are able to get our men and women out of harm's way by preventing, you know, the nuclear capabilities of Iran. But I, along with most people, we don't want to see this escalate further, and we would like to see it end much sooner than later.
You mentioned Private Isabella Gonzalez, who is from North Texas in your district. I had a question. Her death, the ability of Iran to specifically target areas where American troops are living and sleeping, are you worried that their strength in that area has not been downgraded and more American troops will continue to be put at risk?
I think this puts an exclamation point into why this is a dangerous regime that has to be stopped. Exactly your point. They have been denying having these weapons. We know that this is a regime that lies over and over again. The very IRGC that we're trying to negotiate a ceasefire with, that has time and time and again abused that ceasefire, is the same group that we are trying to negotiate. The fact is that they're not doing it in good faith. They are buying their time, and they're going to try to do as much damage on their way out as possible. We've got to prevent that. But we don't want to see any further deaths. But this is a group that has to be stopped by the means that the U.S. has. We have the ability. We need to be able to have the strength and the backbone to complete the mission.
And it was President Trump who declared that they had destroyed Iran's ability to target U.S. troops in the region. Was he mistaken?
Again, I think what you're seeing is this is a regime that continues to lie about its capabilities, which is why we need to get eyes on the ground and to make sure that they do not have the capabilities to be able to do that, because they're going to continue, as long as they do, to try to target Americans.
Congresswoman Beth Van Dyne, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, let us bring in the roundtable to talk about the politics of all this. We have Abby Livingston, contributor with Puck News. We have Natalie Haddad, our political reporter here at WFAA, and Ashley Godot, who is a political director at KVU down in Austin. Abby, we're about 100 days out from the midterms. Even some Republicans seem a bit apprehensive about the war not winding down. How is it playing out in campaigns across the country?
Well, we are absolutely in the home stretch, and that is becoming a big problem with regard to this war, because it has driven up gasoline prices, and there's not much time, even if there's some kind of resolution, for that to come down. And additionally, as we just saw with the interview with Congresswoman Van Dyne, we are now getting into the point where there are American casualties. And so individual members of Congress are now having to answer questions to justify this military action. And it seems like, given that the president wants to, at this point in time, escalate, we're going to see more of that.
And Natalie, every Texas Republican voted for this new spending package. But given Republicans' dominance here in Texas, how do you think it will impact or play out here in the midterms?
You know, Texas has a large population and active service military population. And so I think those questions you have, Chris, are going to resonate here perhaps more than in other areas. I think politically, Republicans are really trying to weigh how they fully support President Trump and in this war and funding it, while also dealing with the fact that we have lost at least one Texan in this war. And how do they balance that? How is that going to affect how people vote for them in the midterms if they are up for election? I think we are going to see how this plays out later in the year more than anything.
And Ashley, what about the Democrats? Because we've all seen these conflicts can take very drastic turns on a dime. Is there a risk to Democrats to being painted as sort of leaving the troops underfunded in the middle of a conflict?
Yeah, no, I don't see that happening. I think the reality is the Republicans are in control of both chambers, right? And so if more money is needed, they're going to get more money. But you can't expect the Democrats to be on board with the conflict that Congress has not voted to continue and has no real say in, other than give us some money. I don't think people at home are paying attention to who voted to give the troops money and who didn't. They just know that they don't want to be involved in all of this. And it goes against what Republicans have said, which is we're going to focus on what's going on here at home, not necessarily what's going on in the rest of the world.
All right. And when you look at this, Ashley, just real quick, when you look at this particular issue, is it the run-up in prices? Is it the soldier's death? What about it do you think will have the most impact when it comes to people going to the polls?
I think if we continue to see more American casualties, that 100% is going to have an effect. But I think a lot of people at home are worried about their bottom lines, what they can afford to do and can't afford to do, especially as you think about November coming up on the holiday season. Folks, if they don't have money in their pockets because they're having to spend way more filling up their gas tanks, that's going to impact how they vote come November.
All right. We're going to hear a lot more from our panel. Got a lot more ahead, including this.
When we come back, Harris County Commissioner Rodney Ellis says some essential services will be cut to close a $180 million deficit. And Dallas City Council member Paula Blackman joins the program to talk about how much money could be generated by naming rights to the new convention center and why she's still fighting for City Hall. Next on Inside Texas Politics.
The city of Dallas is looking for ways to finance the new convention center downtown, and we're getting our first glimpse at how much money the naming rights could bring in. I sat down with Dallas City Council member Paula Blackman, who recently dropped her lawsuit against city officials, but is not done fighting for City Hall. Council member, I know the city manager is coming back about a month from now with recommendations for sites, proposals, options for relocating Dallas City Hall. At that point, is it time to pick an option and move forward?
So we in executive session have seen some options, and I think they're finalizing a deal, if you will, to see which one the city gets a better, that fits us better, because we need a place for our meetings. We need a place for free speech, and we have parking needs. And so they're going back and evaluating on those on all the sites. And that is my understanding, is that there'll be one that should rise to the top, and the decision will then be made. However, we still have that looming looming criteria that says, do we need a supermajority to do that, which was what was in our court case, was we are still wanting an understanding of how many votes does it take for us to move.
The city commissioned some options for naming rights to the new convention center. What are your projections? What have you heard in terms of the kind of revenue that could bring in?
So they show that, I mean, if you look at our budget, and I don't know what it's more like sources of funds and use of funds, I mean, quite a bit of money is allocated to naming rights. I have heard, you know, I think Fort Worth sold theirs. It's really not a lot if you look at it in the needs factor, but it is something contributed to the bottom line. I really don't want to say that our budget hinges on naming rights, but it's a big number, and I can't off the top of my head remember what number it is, but it was like, it was enough for people to go, are we sure we can get that? They seem confident that we can. And we're going for a tier one status, you know, with competing with conventions like Chicago, Las Vegas, Houston. And so with that being said, I mean, we're going to be at the top of the list to where everybody wants to come to Dallas. So they will get, you know, whoever does put their name on it is going to get significant exposure.
Detroit renovated its convention center, and it got, I believe, $1.5 million a year. I think it works out to about $33 million over the next 20-something years. Is that aligned with what you're seeing, that figure?
I've heard 10 to 30. Yeah, and I think it depends on who and what
and how prominent,
because, you know, it is Kay Bailey Hutchison, right?
Yeah.
And we need to honor her. And so we've got to figure out that. But I think that we've got, I know that there's people working that, and hopefully we'll be knowing something soon, because that is part of our overall budget.
Dallas City Council Member Paula Blackman, thank you very much
for
joining us. Thank you. Harris County's budget could top $3 billion for the first time in the next fiscal year. And right now, leaders are facing tough choices to close a major shortfall. I spoke with Harris County Commissioner Rodney Ellis to find out why they're facing a deficit for the fifth straight year. The deficit could be anywhere from $129 million to $287 million, depending on how you set the tax rate. What sort of cuts will be necessary to close that gap?
I met with the budget office a couple hours ago. I think we're somewhere in the neighborhood of about $180 million is what the deficit will be. So we're going to institute a number of measures. We're looking at selling off some property that we have, some excess property. Tough decisions we'll make in that regard. We're going to institute hiring freezes. We're going to come up with a number of one-time fixes to help us get through this. The option of raising revenue won't be on the table. We're simply not going to do that. But we're just going to have to live within our means. You know, we're required to have a balanced budget, and that we will have.
And what about addressing this long-term?
I think it's a real simple issue. We got to live under the laws that the state puts on us. And if we have to cut back on services, some of them, in my judgment, are essential services, we're going to have to do that. I think when you have a deficit that many years in a row, at some point you have to go ahead and admit it's a structural issue. There's some reimbursements that are coming from federal government that'll help us once they get in, but we're going to have to make some tough decisions. Or at some point, enough of my colleagues would have to decide under state law, if we want to give the citizens the option of paying for more services, if they want more, they're going to have to pay for it. It has to go to voters. And if they don't approve it, it won't happen.
Have you submitted a proposal to fully fund the DA's investigation into the deadly shooting involving the ICE agent?
I have. And I thought it was important. I thought it was the right thing to do. For many years while I was in the state Senate, a couple of years here in county government, I chaired the Board of Innocence Project out of New York. I know how important it is for the public to have confidence in law enforcement. In order for our fine law enforcement figures to do their job, they have to have the confidence. People have to believe them, have to trust them. And the harsh reality is, in this environment, it's very difficult for most people to trust the Department of Justice because of the politicization that's going on from the White House. So I thought it's important. You can't do it on every case, but on this case, I thought it's important to do that. I had a casual conversation with the district attorney after he made the decision that he was going to do his own investigation. And I said, look, just know that whatever resources are within reason that you need, I'm going to be one of those advocating for it. And so it was my call. I said, look, I think we'll have a press conference and put it on the agenda so it's clear that we're going to give you the resources that you need. I got a preliminary number. I don't want to announce it on TV before my colleagues see that it's on the agenda, but I think we have a pretty good idea, and it's about in the neighborhood of what I thought it would cost to go and do it.
All right. Harris County Commissioner Rodney Ellis, sir, thank you for your time.
Always good to be with you. Thank you.
And stay with us. We'll bring our roundtable back to talk more politics right after the break. Oh, back to the roundtable now to talk more politics. We have Puck contributor Abby Livingston. We have WFAA political reporter Natalie Haddad and KVU political director Ashley Godot. Natalie, an East Texas data center project was recently pulled, and they cited Governor Abbott's position as one of the reasons. Could this complicate his idea of making Texas the epicenter of AI development?
You know, I think Governor Abbott finds himself in a really tough position. He wants Texas to be the capital of AI, and then he also has to listen to those in rural Texas who don't want anything to do with data centers for the most part, as we've seen in our reporting. And I think he is having a really hard time. I think he expected there to be friction when he shared new calls for different restrictions and things of the like for data centers. But I don't think he expected a company to come out and say publicly that, in part, they are pulling a project project because of him. And so I think it's going to be really interesting how we, you know, see data centers really form moving forward because of what Governor Abbott is now asking for compared to, say, what he was asking for much earlier when he was still pushing for Texas to be the capital of AI.
And Abby, you said you've seen people making their voices heard in ways you haven't seen before. How could this play out in the midterm?
This issue is moving at light speed. And so, you know, it's amazing to me that Governor Abbott is feeling the crunch of it. But where I've been hearing about it is local officials. We've seen some outside of Texas directly lose re-election because of their votes in pushing these data centers. But I'm also hearing concerns from local officials inside of Texas as well.
And Ashley, you know, when I know that some of the developers are now starting to run pro data center ads, I guess it was only a matter of time before they started pushing back on this idea.
I mean, sure they have, but let's just go back to this one company that pulled out. They handed Governor Greg Abbott a gift, okay? Folks in rural communities and some urban communities don't want data centers to come, and he put some rules in place, and they said, oh, look at these rules that he put in place. We can't come there now. That's exactly what the people who live there want to hear. It's a gift to Abbott, and that's just one company. I promise you there are hundreds more that are going to do what they need to do to be able to build in Texas, and there's going to be a big push come January when the legislature is in session with these lobbyists. These data centers are not going to take this lying down. They want to build their centers. They want to build them here in Texas. And they've got the money to try to get some lawmakers on their side.
Yeah, and then obviously then you've got these community town halls and everything else, right, Abby, that you're seeing all these people like speak up and say, we don't want it.
Absolutely. It's driving up electric bills. It's somewhat of an eyesore in communities. And you know, and they, it's noise pollution. And so I expect consultants to really feel the jam of the special interests and then their constituents.
All right. Want to thank our panel, Ashley, Abby, Natalie. Thank you all so much for bringing that bit of context and expertise. Thank you for watching Inside Texas Politics.